Rockstar lifestyle, my don't podcast. Everyday click podcast. Purpose stuff, rolling up podcast. Hey, sipping on purple. I should get a sign on or something that I can say at the beginning every time, but I don't have one. You are listening to episode 007 of the Sipping on Purple podcast. Loretta, say something.
Roger, how's it going?
Yeah, there we go. We're going to be joined later by Brian Cook of MGO Blog, or maybe it's MGO Blog. I'm not sure if there's a pronunciation guide.
It's definitely MGO Blog.
MGO Blog? Okay, good. It sounds a lot better that way. You don't often have to pronounce blog names because we're nerds and we don't interact with other people. Northwestern lost to Illinois the other day. That was interesting.
That was something else. I cannot believe if someone had told me in August that in the first week of October there would be a fairly sizable contingent of people on the internet who wanted Pat Fitzgerald fired, I would have told you were completely insane or Fitzgerald had gotten arrested or something.
You know, I really don't think it's a large contingent. I mean, I saw what's going on over at LTP, Pandemonium. I really think it's a small, you know.
Right, well, large kind of implies a majority, I guess.
Yeah.
Larger than you would think. It's not just one lone nut job. It's a few people.
Not to call people nut jobs, but, you know, for a long time, the consensus has been, most people like Pat Fitzgerald, and there's a vocal contingent that were pretty mad. And I'll give it to them that I think everyone was pretty disappointed with the way the game was managed. It really seems like Northwestern does have a habit of taking their foot off the pedal when they're in front. Because it's the last three times they've been up by a lot of points on a Big Ten game, they've ended up losing. It's getting funny at this point.
Right, it's pretty ridiculous.
I will say I think Northwestern got outplayed Saturday, and Illinois had a few mistakes, goal line interception, there was a terrible pass interference call, and they gave away a fumble when all they had to do was run out the clock, that really allowed Northwestern to, you know, despite everything, still win the game, or still be, you know, pretty close in the game. And, you know, I think the better team won, but they had a chance to win it, and they did not do the things necessary, either on the field with the secondary giving up a lot of big plays, and off it with, you know, the coaching staff lining up, you know, pretty consistently, you know, just running the ball up the gut when there was, A, no need for it because it's 3rd and 8, and B, no results, because I think the next play was 4th and 8.
Right. It's disappointing because that was a game that Illinois is a very good team. That's I think why people are so frustrated. Because Illinois is a good football team, and they were playing at home, and yet they made some mistakes. Northwestern got some breaks, and they really should have won. Northwestern really should have won the game.
Yes.
I think that from an outside perspective, when you just, like, if someone just looked at the final score, said, oh, 38-35, oh, it's a shootout, Illinois ranked, they're the better team, they won, you know, why are people so pissed off? They'd probably be pretty confused. But the way the game played out, it's pretty easy to see why people are upset.
Yeah, you get up 18, keep going.
I think that the big thing that worries me here is Northwestern, they're 2-2, and they have one turnover in 4 games. And they've won the turnover battle by a sizable margin. And yet, despite that, they're still 2-2. And there's some tough teams coming up. And Northwestern, I mean, they're a third of the way through the season with one turnover. They're not going to finish the season with 3 turnovers. They're eventually, just because, you know, they're a college team. And even NFL teams turn the ball over sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a Jets fan. I'm aware.
Right. Even Tom Brady threw 4 interceptions last week.
So. But yeah, definitely. It's not the type of thing where NU has been getting, you know, shafted and getting bad calls against them. They they've had things go right for them in a lot of ways, and they're still 2-2. But that said, I don't think losing to Illinois is the end of the world.
No.
I think Northwestern next week will be under 500 for the first time in a long time, about 5 years, which in this program is probably the longest stretch of that ever. But I don't think that's, you know, there's no shame in losing 38-35 to a ranked team on the road. There is a little bit of shame in the way it happened. I think overall, from a big picture perspective, obviously that was not a good way to lose a game. And but big picture perspective, Dan Persa was phenomenal.
He was indeed. I was not optimistic. After his first two series, he looked pretty shaky.
Yeah.
I was getting worried, but no, he was incredible.
I am a little bit disturbed about the news that came out today, you know, with Mike Trumpy being out for the season, because he looked great. You know, they were opening up holes for him, and he's been one of the few Northwestern runners who's been adept in that when that happens.
Right, he's got decent speed. He doesn't dance around. And he can break tackles occasionally and, you know, fight for an extra yard or two.
And we talk about the offense sputtering and, you know, some of that everyone says was on the game plan. But when your starting quarterback and starting running back, you know, have to leave, that's not a good thing. And their run game was not really that strong after Trumpy left. Trayvon Green looked promising, but it wasn't enough to – You know, Trumpy was great, but in addition to Dan Persa, you know, also, you know, tearing up the defense and, you know, dodging sacks and just doing what he did. Without either of them, the offense really looked hapless. But Persa's play definitely gives me hope for, you know, I think if Persa plays all four quarters of every game Northwestern's had this year, Northwestern's probably 4-0. That's not the case. And we also now know, you know, even though he's finally healthy again, he's not maybe still maybe not ready to play entire games, which is a little bit disconcerting, but he looks great. And I guess the fact that this loss was so painful, I still think it's a potential bowl team. Which is kind of scary because we're getting into that gray area of where you start wondering, are we awful?
Right. I was reading on the Bama Hawkeye at Off Tackle Empire. Always has his bold projections, which is a must read every week. And he made a point that I hadn't considered, and that is that in order to avoid going to the even if Northwestern does get bowl eligible, in order to avoid going to the Pizza Bowl in Detroit, they're likely going to have to win 8 games because. Yeah. Even if they only win 7, and some of the teams with 6, the bowls can choose the 6-win team over the 7-win team.
Mm-hmm.
And the second bowl above the Pizza Bowl is the Ticket City Bowl, which, after Northwestern's fan showing or lack thereof last season,
they're
is probably not
going
to be too excited to have us back. Especially if it's – and regardless, if someone like Ohio State is available in that slot, any obviously bowl – it's going to take Ohio State and their gigantic fan base.
Yeah.
It's looking like Detroit is the best case scenario, right?
Or even I saw one projection that put Northwestern in an at-large bowl. Because, to be honest,
Big Ten team makes the BCS.
I think that, because you look at the schedule, and Minnesota and Purdue look horrendous. And you've got Rice, which... You know, obviously Army's not a great team, but you hope you can beat that level of team, especially with Dan Persa. And if they play like they did on Saturday, a win will probably come. I don't see you choking away, you know, the 3 or 4 games you have against, you know, pretty decently matched teams. Obviously, the season is not going to be, you know... When we did the initial season entry podcast, and we're talking about, well, there's a team that could, you know, compete for the division title if everything went right and could, you know, you know, I guess be like fifth in the division if things went wrong. We could definitely start crossing off the upper echelons of that that projection.
Well, we're not. I mean, we're not quite there. Realistically, we're there. But we did. We're just 0-1 in Big Ten play, and it was lost to the team in the other division. But yes, if they do not beat Michigan, then they are forget it. Then yes, it's. Then there's no way they're going to contend for
that. Another thing we talked about in that season preview thing was how scary Denard Robinson was against Northwestern's defense. And I would say that that fear has just kind of amplified since then. Like, having seen the way we played against, you know, Army and the option, you know, and they had a mobile quarterback, and obviously that's completely different. But Shieldhouse... the thing was, and I said it a bunch of times, was he didn't look capable of hitting a receiver who had a defender within 10 yards of him, but that was rarely an issue. He was there were dudes wide open all day long downfield, a lot of defensive issues. It's scary. I am in full-on terrified mode right now.
Yes, and Michigan's defense is looking like a somewhat competent unit, unlike their tire fire of a defense last season. So even with Michigan's offensive talent, you really only need average defense for them to be a division title contender.
And the funny thing is, watching this game the other day, I was thinking about, I don't know if you remember Michigan-Notre Dame earlier in the year,
right.
Where, you know, like there were 14 scores in like the last 2 minutes. Because... you know, I remember Notre Dame scored, and I thought, there's no way Michigan doesn't score in the next 30 seconds. Like, and that's the same exact thing I thought Saturday when Northwestern went ahead with a minute and 20 seconds left. I thought, like, we just left them, you know, 40 seconds too much. And you know, I was kind of joking and kind of, you know, it happened. You know, they totally...
There's not really much Northwestern could have done about that. When you're down by 3 points, you kind of have to...
Oh, no. Someone was... Possible. People suggested, you know, oh, we should have, you know, not scored there. No, that's definitely what you wanted. But there was a creeping, you know, feeling. It was the same feeling you had when Illinois scored the first touchdown down 18. Like, you kind of knew... the same thing we've had in the past few years. It's really strange. It's starting to get Vikings-esque at this point. Because every time it happens, because Northwestern can hold on to these, like, or stay alive in these shootouts, but when they get ahead, they just don't have a chance.
Right, it's not even just that it's happening against good teams. They've let some bad teams back into the game. They've never managed to completely blow it against bad teams, but they've let the bad teams really get closer than they should have.
I mean,
Central Michigan last year, they had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, and Central Michigan promptly carved up their pass defense and made that a game because Northwestern stopped throwing. And the same sort of thing happened against Indiana last year, I want to say, and the year before that against Eastern Michigan.
But the stat was, yeah, keep going. Do you have more? Is there a longer list? Does it go on for weeks of games we've kind of blown?
It does continue longer. I'm trying to remember. But, right, the stat is that they're, I believe it's that they're 2-4 in Big Ten games when they get a 17-point lead.
Which is absurd. Because being 2-4 in a game is what, in six games is one thing. But being 2-4 in games where you're up 17 points with time already elapsed off the clock. We're not even talking about you spotting a team 17 points. We're talking about you're up 17 with less than 60 minutes to go. And more often than not, Northwestern has blown that lead.
I was thinking about this, and Northwestern has more wins than Big Ten play under Fitzgerald when they get down by 17 than when they're up by 17.
We really should just stop paying attention at this point. Nothing makes sense.
Right.
I mean,
they came back from 25 down against Indiana a couple of years ago. They came back from 21 down against that awful Minnesota Brewster team that went 1-11. They were down by 21. They did overtime against them. And I think I want to say there was a game against Purdue a couple of years ago. You remember that game where Sherrick McManus had that crazy interception?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were down, I think, 17-3 or something like that. If there's any Michigan fans listening, I think the best way I can summarize Northwestern football is that none of it makes sense ever. So it's not really worth it continuing to try and figure it out. Because this is not like a fluke anymore when you lose three straight games that you had a 17-point lead in. It's starting to turn into a – we're not talking about three straight games that you were up 17 and you let the other team back in. Three straight games that you were up 17 and you lost, like the final score.
The streak gets longer if you start getting it to let the other team back in it, I guess, when you take out, you know, FCS teams. But
yeah,
we have at least managed to bury the FCS teams when we get a lead, so we got that going for us.
The Cardiac Cats thing it continues to, you know, just always be true all the time, and it's the worst.
That was always a term of endearment because they usually won the close games.
Yeah.
We've seen two straight close losses, and it's becoming okay. Well, I think that what's happening here is that a lot of the problems that have existed in the past, you know, the things that we're criticizing the coaching staff for now, these have been problems going back a year or two or longer. It's just that they're finally starting to result in losses. And really, when you're winning games, even if the coaching staff is making mistakes, it's all swept under the rug because, hey, we won. And it's such a short season that any win, and for Northwestern fans, we take any win. But these problems like ultra-conservative play calling with the lead late in games, that's been going on for years now. I mean, that's been a consistent problem. And the same thing with letting these quarterbacks just pick us apart in the fourth quarter when we're losing. That's also happened for a long time. So just I think that that's what – and these two recent losses have really exacerbated these problems because we're not getting the breaks that have allowed us to win close games in the past. And a lot of stuff, you know, Pat Fitzgerald and going back before him, Randy Walker, have both had great records in these close games. But – and – part of that is certainly, I don't think it's entirely luck, but I think there's a large luck component involved in that. And some of that luck is not really going Northwestern's way anymore. And now people are starting to really highlight these weaknesses that were we sort of just closed our eyes to them in the past because it wasn't costing us games. But now that it's costing us games, people are upset about it.
So I think the question is, when you look at, you know, the things people say about, you know, fire this person, fire that person. First of all, I would say firing someone when your team is 2-2, unless you have the highest reputation possible, is kind of silly.
Definitely.
Like,
firing Pat Fitzgerald's obvious
genuinely silly concept. Just because, first of all, the real reason I don't like the constant talk, I guess, is because it's just so implausible. Like, first of all, they just signed him to a 10-year contract extension.
Right.
If you don't like him, that's one thing.
You can't fire him. Right. You can't fire him unless he breaks NCAA rules or the law.
And it's just
otherwise you can't do it.
Pretty genuinely silly because he's done very, you know, obviously people say he hasn't won a Big Ten championship. But come on, I mean, you know, like Michigan even held on to Rich Rodriguez for 3 years. Different scenario, obviously, but like,
and that was a pretty controversial firing too.
Yeah, like Pat, like Fitz has done, you know, more than any Northwestern coach of the past would expect. Obviously, I enjoy people who have high expectations, but you know, the whole firing thing just is silly, and that's the – because it's not going to happen. I agree with criticisms because I think he didn't do a good job. Didn't put the team in a position to win, which is what he likes to say on Saturday. And obviously some of that's on the, you know, secondary too. I do think there is a little bit of, you know, maybe things that someone could say about, you know, a coordinator – that would be plausible.
Right. I'm not in favor of firing Mick McCall.
Neither am I.
For a couple of reasons. And first of all, I think that McCall has done a fantastic job in developing quarterbacks and wide receivers. And he's taken – Northwestern has consistently had good quarterback play throughout his offensive time. And he returns C.J. Bechet, who I don't think was a guy who was getting a lot of Big Ten offers as a high school player. Not really Big Ten arm strength. And he turned C.J. Bechet into a solid Big Ten quarterback. And Dan Tursa, same thing. Mike Kafka was another guy who I think he had some talent in high school, but he was very raw. And he made such a huge transformation between his junior and senior year. And also, all these wide receivers at Northwestern is consistently a good wide receivers, and none of these guys are NFL players. I don't, have any of these guys even gotten into NFL games as receivers? They might have been maybe in preseason, but I don't think in real games.
Yeah, definitely.
So
Marks has it in Brewer, right. Not Brewer. Marks has it in Peterman had some preseason wide receivering, but not in games.
Right. This isn't Michigan with a core of Braylon Edwards and Jason Avant.
Hey, Michigan fans.
We're not talking about that level of talent here. And the second factor is that I think this conservative mindset, now I'm obviously not behind the scenes, but I think and so I don't know who's really making the final decision on this, but I think a lot of this is probably stemming from Pat Fitzgerald. And the reason I say that is that when you look at Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern teams he was on, those teams ran the ball really well, and they had great defenses. And they conserved, those teams had really conservative play calling with the lead, and it was smart because they had Darnell Autry, who was an All-American, and they had Pat Fitzgerald and a bunch of other really good players on defense. And then you look at when Pat Fitzgerald was an assistant coach, and he also coached under Randy Walker, who was a running back and a guy who was a believer in running the ball, even though he did open things up. But Northwestern also had good running backs when he was an assistant. You had David Anderson, Jason Wright, Noah Heron, and Tyrell Stutton. And those four guys all got into, were all NFL players and good college running backs. None of them were great NFL players by any means, but they all got carries in the NFL as running backs. So now, you look at this team, and the running backs they have are not very good. And now their best running back is out, and the running backs are really not very good. So I think it's time to reevaluate this conservative strategy on Fitz's part.
Yeah.
And that is the one silver lining that I think Mike Trombley's injury could lead to. I didn't just post this on the site right before we went on the air. Was that? I think
are we on the air? Out, I think we're on the computer.
Right.
Not the air.
Well, right.
Moving on.
Before we start recording, I should say. But the thing is, now with Trombley out, I think it's going to, hopefully, will become obvious to the staff that they need to just unleash Persa. And it's got to be pass first down, pass second down, pass third down, and maybe run the ball occasionally as a change of pace. I'd like to see at least a 2-to-1 pass-to-run ratio.
Yeah, we've wanted that for a while, which is – and it's surprising because Northwestern was very pass-happy for a long time. But, you know, now it seems to have – the past year or so, it's kind of gone away. If I had to summarize my stance on this, first, I just think it's all not – the whole firing people thing I don't think is something that needs to be brought up right now because it's the middle of the season and, you know, we'll talk about it at the end of the season. I think there was some underperforming there by the coaching staff, but I think this is silly. Although I do like the fact that the Northwestern fan base is turning into a crazy, angry fan base. I think we have a lot of room to improve in this scenario. I want us to be tracking like people's like flights so that we like so that we like know which like head coaches
are. Auburn fan showed up to yell at Gene Trizic.
Yeah, I want to be
Auburn
like.
Fan showed up to yell at Gene Trizic.
I want to be like poisoning trees and like yelling at people on the radio, and we can do it if we want. And I'm glad that the Northwestern fan base is pulling all the crazy out because college football needs crazy, and I think we're making. Because normally, you know, Northwestern, you know, we're the little, we have a little frilly tea party thing going on. That's our kind of image. So I want to go for crazy. This is my goal, and I think we can achieve it in our lifetimes.
Right, we're already starting to get pretty crazy in basketball with the firing the coach stuff.
Oh yeah, no, well that's different. I think this is more of like a minor thing went wrong. That guy needs to go. Like, not even like a huge like scandal or a huge like I mean, I guess the Army loss was kind of embarrassing, but I mean, you're Northwestern. You're 2-2 for you're like 500 for the first time in a long time. You know, it's a good time, I guess, in Northwestern sports when the when expectations are going up. Anyway, we're gonna take a break. I think the real problem is like our joke percentage. We actually had like jokes in the first few episodes of the podcast, and now like things started going badly, and like we're jokeless. Like it's like a humorless void of Mick McCall firing speculation, which is the worst thing possible. But anyway, we have ourselves a break right now, and in a few minutes we'll have Brian Cook from MGo blog, which I now know how to pronounce. So break. Well, I missed the record button. That's pretty disappointing.
In the joint, huh? Stealing my light, huh? Watch me, dude, watch me. Yo, check these up top murderers. Snowy in the bezel is the cloud merges. FBI trying, won't word with this. Kid who pooped out, bust a shot up in the beacon. Catch me in the corner, not speaking. Crushed out heavenly, your G-Rock, the sweet daddy long fox mix. Chicken and broccoli while he looks stinky with his man straight from Raleigh dorm. He recognized Kojak. I slapped the five master killer, cracked his tiny form. Everybody break bread, huddle around. Guzzle that, I'm about to throw hair in your back. Since the face been revealed, game got real. Radio been gassing niggas, my imposters. Scream the ill, I'm the inventor. 86 rhyming at the center debut. 93 LP, told you to enter. Punk faggot niggas, stealing my light. Crawl up in the bed with grandma beneath the lazy boy where you hid your knife. Back, stretch Cadillacs, fruit cocktails, hit the shells, and plus pastry rag. Walk with me, like Dorothy, try to judge these plus degrees. Sussacal, Rastafi, getting waxed all through the drive-thru. Take the stand, throw my handle on the Bible, and tell lies true. I'm the ultimate, splash your Wolverine, raise a star ring, Dolomit. Student and no hole in it. Ayo, this rap is like ZD, face of me, real TV. Crescent high speed, strawberry kiwi. As we approach the hood.
And we're back, and we are joined by Brian Cook from MGo blog. How is Michigan and things of that nature?
We're quite well. It's been a lovely past 6 months or so after the last 3 years of total failure. So we're enjoying the change of pace.
All right. So okay, for Northwestern fans, the last time we sort of our programs sort of. Made contact was like in 2008, and you guys were in the middle of going 3-9, and we kind of like won, which doesn't happen a lot, but we won by like a relatively large amount against you. I assume everything's still like exactly the same as it was in 2008, and very little has changed in Michigan, right?
Pretty much. You're going to be seeing Nick Sheridan as a senior, and that's going to be totally awesome for you guys. Actually might have worse personnel on defense, but they're coached this time, which is kind of a different
interesting change
that are telling them to do things.
I've heard from anyone who's sort of the Michigan man variety that game was like, obviously you guys continued in your you know Rich Rodriguez era tragedies, but I heard that was like close to the low point of like Michigan football fandom. It was like you lost to Northwestern, which is like bad enough. It was like really like rainy and sleet, and like people were just like leaving in vast numbers, and like I think it might have been the loss that like sealed you guys as not being bowl eligible for the first time for like forever.
No, they were already like 3-7 by the time that happened, but it was the worst.
Oh yeah, it was the worst game you've ever been to.
I'm sure that other stuff would just experience itself. I mean, there was no point in being there. You know, the difference between going 3-9 and going 4-8, the weather was just awful. Like, it was freezing, and it was raining, and it was windy, and it was just blowing sideways. fumble a punt, or did he get blocked? One of the two. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So it was it's definitely a memorable game. We'll give it that.
When you kind of get to skip Michigan for a few years, it's that generally would be a good thing for Northwestern. But I'm now scared because the last time we played you, it was kind of all right, and I think we might have missed some of the more, some of the better teams to play when you have to go up against Michigan. And now it appears we've walked right into Hokamania. And, Denard Robinson, who we haven't seen yet, and just lots of terrifying things that make me not want to play Michigan right now, considering,
Have you, I don't know if you've really been up on what's gone on in the last couple of years. Like, this is the point at which you want to catch Michigan. They're 5-0. They've won their first Big Ten game against mediocre opposition. And that now it's like the drop off the cliff point. I know you guys are having some issues with Persa, but I'm not walking into this game thinking, oh, it's going to be a slam dunk. It's I'm really interested to see what happens. I mean, it appears Northwestern's run defense is pretty decent, and Michigan might be able to pass, but it might not be able to pass. And with this defense, I mean, they're obviously a lot better, but I mean, they haven't really been tested except against Notre Dame, and I don't know if I could say that they passed that. Turnovers by Notre Dame, so I don't know if I'd be quite as humble as all that.
Yeah, that's definitely good to hear, because right now the Northwestern, we're on a two-game losing streak, and one of those is against Army, and you said we appear to have a pretty good run defense, but they ran for, obviously all they do is run, but...
Well, Illinois pretty well, so I
am... Yeah. It's not like anything you see, yeah.
Yeah.
But last week we were able to, a lot of people were concerned about, Nathan Shielhouse, as a running quarterback. Those types of guys tend to do well against Northwestern. But instead of, running all over us, which is kind of what I expected, and I think a lot of other Northwestern fans did, he ends up, torching the Northwestern pass defense. Obviously, there's I think Denard probably goes on the other end of that, running quarterback spectrum where I don't think he's going to – I mean, do you sense that a similar thing like that might happen, or is he going to stick to what Denard does best?
Well, they were telling everybody that they weren't going to run him very much, and he might get 1,000 yards this year, but they were really going to run their offense, and that went out the window about halfway through the Notre Dame game. And kind of chucked it up and prayed, but by the end of that game, he had 21 carries. By the end of the Eastern Michigan game, he had 26, which was just kind of mind-blowing.
Well, that's against the vaunted Eagles defense, too.
Well, they did manage to keep him down to just 6 against Minnesota, but it's obvious that Eastern Michigan is much, much better than Minnesota. I think it's real competition. I think you're going to see him run 20 times a game. Thereabouts. If Michigan gets ahead by a bit, they might try to shut him down, but that might happen against Purdue. I don't see that necessarily happening in a whole lot of good teams like that.
I know there's practically nothing you can take out of, playing Minnesota really in any way, shape, or form at this point in Minnesota football history, but I will say you remain, pretty... not as confident. I don't see Northwestern beating any team in the NCAA by, or playing anywhere near the way Michigan did on Saturday. Make that of that what you will, considering Minnesota appears to barely even be a Division I school at this point. But
yeah, I mean, and they were without their starting quarterback as well. So if Marquise Gray plays, they might cross half the
Yeah, that win I think is that whole Minnesota thing being on our schedule I think is what's keeping some of the masses at bay with the way people were kind of displeased with Pat Fitzgerald after the Illinois game. But five games into the whole not Rich Rodriguez thing, how's that going? Obviously, you're 5-0, but you sound a little bit more, a little bit less on the positive side than, you know, if Northwestern was 5-0, we'd be, you know, pretty much ready to, you know, crown Pat Fitzgerald as some sort of intergalactic emperor of some sort. Yeah, I saw that. I knew I was thinking of Zoltan Mesko in the back of my head because I definitely knew that was where I was going. But, you know, I think Pat Fitzgerald's name might be not – he's not as much of an intergalactic emperor by name. But, you know, I think he could take that spot if we were 5-0.
Well, you'll have to work on that in the future. I think it doesn't really have anything to do with – Rodriguez or Hogue, it's just that this is where Michigan's been the last two seasons, and the bottom has either dropped off entirely, as it did 2 years ago, or almost entirely, as it did last year. So I think it's different, because, you know, Michigan had kind of a matchup against their Indiana, so they barely beat Indiana in the last 2 years, and I would say that this year San Diego State team with a veteran quarterback with some pretty big holes on their team. Kind of like the equivalent of the late Chapel era Indiana teams, where they were kind of pesky if you weren't very good. And Michigan basically throttled them. So I think that's the main difference in terms of resume between this year and last year, is that, you know, they had one of those games against a team that's going to be mediocre, and they handled them. And that gives me hope that we're going to see some real, actual football being played.
Shouldn't that throttling of San Diego State, though, just make you scared for the future of the Brady Hoke era?
Well, you could make that argument. His team did crater after he left Ball State as well, so it's possible that, you know, when he leaves in 10 years or so, he'll have a real bad year after that, but I'm going to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Okay. We'll have you back on the podcast in 2027.
And I'll gnash my teeth and rent my garments for you, I promise.
Okay. But just in general, the way things have gone, I mean, obviously you talked about the differences in, you know, in resume, but just in terms of, like, what you've seen out of the team, obviously – you appear to have noticed this defense thing that now may or may not exist in Ann Arbor. Just what sort of other types of changes. And obviously there was a lot of talk about the way that, you know, Denard might be handled differently, you know, in a not Rich Rodriguez offense. But how has the on-field play, not just in terms of results, I guess, kind of changed? And has it been for the better or should we not be as scared as I am?
Well, I think the spread is probably fair. The spread is Michigan, I think, -6. But the main differences this year are that they have people in the secondary that do this thing where sometimes they're close to the opponent receiver, and if the opponent receiver is throwing a ball, they reach up and they maybe knock it away or intercept it, or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what that's called.
I'm going to tell our secondary about this.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. I don't know if you. I think it's called coverage.
You really shouldn't have given us the idea, because we have not heard of it yet this year. And I'm going to go run over to the football offices and tell them about it.
Maybe if you had a bye week, I'd be concerned about this concept spreading. But I think it's a little bit late to now. But they've got two safeties now that are, I think, would be better than Michigan had in a very long time. And I'm not talking about Rich Rodriguez era. I'm talking about going back to, like, Marcus Ray in 1997. Like, they've got Kovacs and Thomas Gordon, and both those guys are almost totally reliable. And Gordon, we don't have the track record yet for him, but Kovacs, always in the right spot, always a solid tackler. You know, always gets into his zone, drops, hasn't let anyone behind him the whole year. I mean, the longest touchdown Michigan has given up, other than the kind of busted weird coverage that was Madison's fault for not having anyone back on against Notre year, Michigan was just giving up free touchdowns left and right. I mean, if you wanted a touchdown, like 40 yards, 50 yards, 60 yards, go ahead, man. Nobody's going to stop. This year, Michigan is at least making them earn it, and that just in and of itself is a huge difference between the last couple of years of defense and this year, because if you're going to score it, you're actually going to have to put together a drive, and that's wonderful. I cannot express how wonderful that is. That'll happen to you at some point. You'll be like, oh, this is nice. I don't hate it when defense comes out on the field.
Yeah, because I was actually talking about it earlier with my co-writer. I had some shades of that Michigan-Notre Dame ending last week because Northwestern scored to go up with a minute and 20 seconds left, and I was like, we're not pulling this game out. We might have just scored the go-ahead touchdown, but I have seen this movie before. It was on national TV.
I caught the replay of the second half, and it was I think I was actually on your blog, and I was trolling for this week in Chad and Freud material, I'm sorry to say.
Well, no, it's deservedly so. Sorry we're not schadenfreude-y enough. You should have...
If you headed over to Lake... What's his name? Like Glocknar or something?
Oh, yeah. He was going nuts. That's kind of his goal. Like, if you're listening, hey... Lies. Yeah, no, we don't get too schadenfreude-y. We have the occasional, you know, people who want to fire Pat Fitzgerald, which can I get a confirmation on this? That seems like a bad idea.
It does seem like a bad idea. When Michigan was looking for a coach, and people were bringing up Pat Fitzgerald, I was like, that seems like a really good idea.
And he was like, and he's like so he's crazily like, devoted to Northwestern.
Right, he's like talking the hand, like he didn't even want to hear it. Like,
if Michigan paid me enough money, I would become a Michigan fan. So, like, right. Come on, Pat.
It can't be very much money at this point. Like,
I'd go for a little bit higher. I'd want to be in the in the mid-range of Big Ten fans, which is what Pat Fitzgerald also wanted, but for coaches. So we get that. I think that's kind of a little bit out there. Yeah. We'll get a little bit more shouted for it because it was definitely a pretty bitter collapse, but that's the type of thing. Terrible segue. Michigan really hasn't had to deal with this year, obviously being 5-0. But I guess what do you foresee out of Michigan coming up? You know, obviously there hasn't been much of a test yet. You know, maybe Notre Dame, but I guess what do you see in general out of Michigan in the first year of the Hoke era?
Well, I've been impressed with how, other than the defense, which is obviously much, much better, I've been impressed with how Borges has adapted. So in the spring game, they ran a lot of pro stuff and it didn't work. And then in the first couple of games, they ran a lot of pro stuff and it didn't work. And they've been steadily moving away from that. And they fixed their run game and they've been running a lot of stuff that Rodriguez ran last year, and they've been adding their own touches that Borges has been familiar with, like the offensive coordinator for hundreds and hundreds of years. So just their ability to adapt to their personnel instead of vice versa is a big deal, because when you have Denard Robinson, you know, it's a different situation than Michigan had in 2008 when they didn't really have anybody. I mean, I think four of the five skill position players were freshmen. They had something like six or seven offensive linemen, all of whom were not very good or had been recruited to run zone read. I mean, that's a reason that they had been recruited to run zone blocking under Mike DeBoer anyway. But in a situation where, you know, you might as well just get over it. This is like, you have a guy who was seriously in Heisman contention until about the season and, you know, has a true sophomore. So that's a guy that you really need to adapt to, and I think the board is, we're seeing him do that, and I'm hoping that by next week he'll be as comfortable as he's going to get with the guy, because we're going to need, we can't go line up under center and run power.
Yeah, I thought seeing everything, like, you can't screw up Denard Robinson, and it doesn't look like he has any, it looks like they thought about seeing what worked, and it just doesn't. It's not possible.
I compare it to Jonathan Bornstein, where you know, he was playing in some pretty World Cup friendlies, and he was so bad that starting him was impossible. So that's what running power is meant. Like, just running Wisconsin style, machine state style, power football, as they've been averaging 2 yards a carry against the position. So it's just something they can do.
I really wasn't expecting a Jonathan Bornstein reference. Do you have any, like, Taylor Twilman or, I don't know, I can't think of any other random guys who really shouldn't be playing for the U.S. national soccer team.
I don't really have a Taylor Twilman drop right now.
I'm trying to think of some sort of Breck Shea comparison, but I'm just going to stop. No one's listening to this. No one's enjoying this, so I'm going to stop. I was going to say I was disappointed. I didn't realize midway through this that we Northwestern fans never got to experience Tate Forcier in all of his glory. And I'm a little bit saddened about that. I just realized that midway through this interview, and we get stuck with Denard, and that's not going to be good. So,
playing Penn State this year, right?
Yeah, where is the? I lost track of the Forcier.
He's a San Jose State. My main complaint is that whenever Penn State is just beyond awful, Michigan is off the schedule. Like when they were terrible with Zach Mills and winning games, losing games 6-4 against Iowa, off the schedule. This year they can't complete a 4-pass, off the schedule.
Oh, so you're comparing Forcier to the McGloins of the world. You're saying that we're going to get our McGloin fix.
Well, no, it's just that, like, you may have missed the Tate Forcier experience, but you also get to experience the beat-up on Penn State when they're at their most vulnerable. So,
well,
yeah,
I will say that we lost to Matt McGloin last year. We had a 21-point lead, and he gritted and hustled his way back into a 35-21 victory, which was... Yeah. It's a rough subject.
We got lit up for 41 by McGloin. I mean, he only gave up 35, man.
I brought up the. I think I deserve that as karmic payback for me bringing up the 2008 Northwestern thing.
Oh no, it's fine. I mean, that was so stupid that it was actually kind of fun. Like it's not a painful memory. I established my fandom as more established than it was. My attendance at the 2008 Northwestern game. So that's
that solidifies you as a Michigan like fan. Like that moment is like the moment. Like anyone,
nobody can ever question my Michigan fandom. I can just say I was at 2008 Northwestern and I stayed the whole time. And they have to back up.
Yeah. So looking forward to Saturday. You said you thought that the line of Michigan plus or Michigan sorry minus six. Seem pretty decent. I guess what's your forecast at this point for Saturday?
Well, it's hard to tell because I mean everybody's saying that Persa is fine and Persa is going to play, but you know, he missed the entire fourth quarter of a rivalry game last week, and there's always all this gamesmanship. Like we were told that Mark Diego was going to play, and he didn't play. So if he plays, then I think it'll be a competitive, interesting game because Michigan. Has some irresponsibility on their front four, and versus a guy who will just murder you if you let him outside of a rushing lane. So I can see Michigan giving up some points. That defense backsliding a little bit. It's hard to see Michigan's run defense shut down by a not elite. I mean, not run defense, run offense shut down by a non elite defense. I think. I mean, they're just putting up video game numbers still. I mean, they've got Denard, and that offensive line has returned. And they're playing pretty well. Fitzgerald is not number one back, and I really like him. So I think it'll be hard for Northwestern to keep Michigan in 20. And Persa, I mean, he's a question mark. Trumpy being out, I don't know how much that affects your running backs, because I've always sort of, Northwestern running backs always...
It's a non-factor. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think Persia's going to play, like, pretty – I do honestly think that he's – although there has been a lot of gamesmanship with him this year, but I can't disagree with you. I think you guys are going to put up some serious points. And maybe one of those Northwestern 2000 the 54-51 shootout type of thing. Probably not.
that you shouldn't have brought up. That still hurts, man.
You see, this was before my time as a Northwestern fan, so I'm actually.
My God.
Yeah, I know. I was not in college at the time. Anyway. That's like the crowning moment of like any North, like, because that was like, it's like regarded as one of like important college football games, and Northwestern doesn't have any of those. So, but anyway, is there anything else I could bring up? I should hate, I should be trying to make Michigan fans uncomfortable, right? That's my job,
yeah,
so.
I mean, that's pretty much all you got. Like,
yeah.
If you want to, like, if you're really trying to get, like, punched by a visiting fan this weekend, just, like...
Always.
Pretend you're Anthony Thomas and just pretend to fumble and
yeah.
You might get the job done. I mean, Michigan fans are pretty low-key as a rule, but there's some frat boys,
so. I'll just, and also probably wear an Ohio State jersey for no particular reason. I think that could get it done. But, a lot of Michigan fans appear to be ready to experience Ryan Field. All of its glory under the lights. So, you're making the trip, right?
Yes, I am. I am planning on making the trip. Yes.
Have you experienced Ryan Field in all of its glory?
Yes, I went in 07 when Northwestern decided to punch itself in the face in the fourth quarter over and over again.
Yeah, we're good at that, the face punching thing. But anyway, enjoy the beautiful random concrete towers. It's pretty breathtaking. And I assume you might have heard of MGO blog listeners. Brian Cook, thank you for coming on with us. If you haven't, you probably should, like, read it and stuff. It's, like, good. but anyway, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And, enjoy the game. And, we're not going to win, but moving on. You told me not to be pessimistic, but I'm just really pessimistic right now. Despite the whole, you know, Michigan hasn't played anybody. But, yeah, thanks for listening, y'all. I keep missing the record button. I'm so unprofessional.